Part 2. Well. 1. What Kelsier would have given for a pencil and paper. Something to write on, some way to pass the time. A means of collecting his thoughts and creating a plan of escape. As the days passed, he tried scratching notes into the sides of the well, which proved impossible. He tried unraveling threads from his clothing, then tying knots in them to represent words. Unfortunately, threads vanished soon after he pulled them free, and his shirt and trousers immediately returned to the way they'd looked before. Fuzz, during one of his rare visits, explained that the clothing wasn't real. Or rather, it was just an extension of Kelsier's spirit. For the same reason, he couldn't use his hair or blood to write. He didn't technically have either. It was supremely frustrating, but sometime during his second month of imprisonment, he admitted the truth to himself. Writing wasn't all that important. He'd never been able to write while confined to the pits, but he'd planned all the same. Yes, they had been feverish plans, impossible dreams, but lack of paper hadn't stopped him. The attempts to write weren't about making plans so much as finding something to do. A quest to soak up his time. It had worked for a few weeks, but in acknowledging the truth, he lost his will to keep trying to find a way to write. Fortunately, about the time he acknowledged this, he discovered something new about his prison. Whispering. Oh, he couldn't hear it, but could he hear anything? He didn't have ears. He was, what had Fuzz said? A cognitive shadow? A force of mind holding his spirit together, preventing it from diffusing? Says would have had a field day. He loved mystical topics like this. Regardless, Kelsier could sense something. The well continued to pulse as it had before, sending waves of writhing shock through the walls of his prison and out into the world. Those pulses seemed to be strengthening, a continuous thrumming, like the sense Bronze lent one in hearing people using allomancy. Inside of each pulse was something. Whispers, he called them, though they contained more than just words. They were saturated with sounds, scents, and images. He saw a book with ink staining its pages, a group of people sharing a story. Terracemen in robes? Says it? The pulses whispered chilling words. Hero of ages, the announcer, world bringer. He recognized those terms from the ancient terrace prophecies mentioned in Alendi's logbook. Kelsier knew the discomforting truth now. He had met a god, which meant there was real depth and reality to faith. Did this mean there was something to that array of religions Sayes had kept in his pocket, like playing cards to stack a deck? You have brought ruin upon this world. Kelsier settled into the powerful light that was the well and found, with practice, that if he submerged himself in the center right before a pulse, he could ride it a short distance. It sent his consciousness traveling out of the well to catch glimpses of each pulse's destination. He thought he saw libraries, quiet chambers where distant terracemen spoke, exchanging stories and memorizing them. He saw madmen huddled in streets, whispering the words the pulses delivered. He saw a mistborn man, noble, jumping between buildings. Something other than Kelsier rode with those pulses. Something directing an unseen work. Something interested in the lore of the terrace. It took Kelsier an embarrassingly long time to realize he should try another tack. He dunked himself into the center of the pool, surrounded by the too thin liquid light, and when the next pulse came, he pushed himself in the opposite direction, not along with the pulse, but toward its source. The light thinned, and he looked into some place new, a dark expanse that was neither the world of the dead nor the world of the living. In that other place, he found destruction, decay, not blackness, for blackness was too complete, too whole to represent this thing he sensed in the beyond. It was a vast force that would gleefully take something as simple as darkness, then rip it apart. This force was time infinite. It was the winds that weathered, the storms that broke, the timeless waves running slowly, slowly, slowly to a stop as the sun and the planet cooled to nothing. It was the ultimate end and destiny of all things. And it was angry. Kelsier pulled back, throwing himself up out of the light, gasping, trembling. He had met God, but for every push, there was a pull. What was the opposite of God? What he had seen troubled him so much that he almost didn't return. He almost convinced himself to ignore the terrible thing in the darkness. He nearly blocked out the whispers and tried to pretend he had never seen that awesome, vast destroyer. But of course he couldn't do that. Kelsier had never been able to resist a secret. This thing, even more than meeting Fuzz, proved that Kelsier had been playing all along at a game whose rules far outmatched his understanding. That both terrified and excited him. And so he returned to gaze upon the thing. Again and again he went, struggling to comprehend, though he felt like an ant trying to understand a symphony. He did this for weeks, right up until the point when the thing looked at him. Before it hadn't seemed to notice, as one might not notice the spider hiding inside a keyhole. This time, though, Kelsier somehow alerted it. The thing churned in an abrupt change of motion, then flowed toward Kelsier, its essence surrounding the place from which Kelsier observed. It rotated slowly about itself in a vortex, like an ocean that began turning around one spot. Kelsier couldn't help but feel that an infinite, vast eye was suddenly squinting at him. He fled, splashing, kicking up the liquid light as he backed away into his prison. He was so alarmed that he felt a phantom heartbeat thrumming inside of him, his essence acknowledging the proper reaction to shock and trying to replicate it. That stilled as he settled into his customary seat at the side of the pool. The sight of that thing turning its attention upon him, the sensation of being tiny in the face of something so vast, deeply troubled Kelsier. For all his confidence and plotting, he was basically nothing. His entire life had been an exercise in unintentional bravado. Months passed. He didn't return to study the thing beyond. Kelsier instead waited for Fuzz to visit and check in on him, as he did periodically. When Fuzz finally arrived, he looked even more unraveled than the last time, mists escaping from his shoulders, a small hole in his left cheek exposing a view into his mouth, his clothing growing ragged. "Fuzz?" Kelsier asked. "I saw something. This ruin you spoke of. I think I can watch it." Fuzz just paced back and forth, not even speaking. "Fuzz? Hey, are you listening?" Nothing. "Idiot," Kelsier tried. "Hey, you're a disgrace to deityhood. Are you paying attention?" Even an insult didn't work. Fuzz just kept pacing. "Useless," Kelsier thought as a pulse of power left the well. He happened to catch a glimpse of Fuzz's eyes as the pulse passed. And in that moment, Kelsier was reminded why he had named this creature a god in the first place. There was an infinity beyond those eyes, a complement to the one trapped here in this well. Fuzz was the infinity of a note held perfectly, never wavering, the majesty of a painting, frozen and still, capturing a slice of life from a time gone by. It was the power of many, many moments, compressed somehow into one. Fuzz stopped before him, and his cheeks unraveled fully, revealing a skeleton beneath that was also unraveling, eyes glowing with eternity. This creature was a divinity. He was just a broken one. Fuzz left, and Kelsier didn't see him for many months. The stillness and silence of his prison seemed as endless as the creatures he had studied. At one point he found himself planning how to draw the attention of the destructive one, if only to beg it to end him. It was when he started talking to himself that he really got worried. "What have you done? I saved the world, freed mankind, gotten revenge. The goals can align. You are a coward. I changed the world. And if you're just a pawn of that thing beyond, like the Lord Ruler claimed, Kelsier, what if you have no destiny other than to do as you're told?" He contained the outburst, recovered himself, but the fragility of his own sanity unnerved him. He hadn't been completely sane in the pits, either. In a moment of stillness, staring at the shifting mists that made up the walls of the cavernous room, he admitted a deeper secret to himself. He hadn't been completely sane since the pits. That was one reason why he didn't at first trust his senses when someone spoke to him. "Now this, I did not expect." Kelsier shook himself, then turned with suspicion, worried he was hallucinating. It was possible to see all kinds of things in those shifting mists that made up the walls of the cavern, if you stared at them long enough. This, however, was not a figure made of mist. It was a man with stark white hair, his face defined by angular features and a sharp nose. He seemed vaguely familiar to Kelsier, but he couldn't place why. The man sat on the floor, one leg up and his arm resting upon his knee. In his hand he held some kind of stick. Wait, no, he wasn't sitting on the floor, but on an object that somehow seemed to be floating upon the mists. The white, log-like object sank halfway into the mists of the floor and rocked like a ship on the water, bobbing in place. The rod in the man's hand was a short oar, and his other leg, the one that wasn't up, rested over the side of the log and vanished into the misty ground, visible only as an obscured silhouette. "You," the man said to Kelsier, "are very bad at doing as you're supposed to."
"Who are you?"
Kelsier asked, stepping to the edge of his prison, eyes narrowed. This was no hallucination. He refused to believe his sanity was that far gone. "A spirit?" "Alas," the man said, "death has never really suited me. Bad for the complexion, you see." He studied Kelsier, lips raised in a knowing smile. Kelsier hated him immediately.
"Got stuck there, did you?" the man said. "In Etty's prison?"
He clicked his tongue.
"Fitting recompense for what you did. Poetic, even."
"What I did?"
"Destroying the pits, oh, scarred one. That was the only perpendicularity on this planet with any reasonable ease of access. This one is very dangerous, growing more so by the minute, and difficult to find. By doing as you did, you basically ended traffic through Scadrial, upended an entire mercantile ecosystem, which I'll admit was fun to watch."
"Who are you?"
Kelsier said.
"I?" the man said. "I am a drifter, a miscreant, the flame's last breath, made of smoke at its passing."
"That's needlessly obtuse."
"Well, I'm that, too." The man cocked his head. "That mostly, if I'm honest."
"And you claim to not be dead?"
"If I were, would I need this?"
the drifter said, knocking his oar against the front of his small, log-like vessel. It bobbed at the motion, and for the first time Kelsier was able to make out what it was. Arms he'd missed before, hanging down into the mists, obscured. A head that drooped at its neck, a white robe masking the shape.
"A corpse," he whispered.
"Oh, Spanky, here is just a spirit. It's damnably difficult to get about in this sub-astral. Anyone physical risks slipping through these mists and falling, perhaps forever. So many thoughts pool together here, becoming what you see around you, and you need something finer to travel over it all."
"That's horrible.
Says the man who built a revolution upon the backs of the dead. At least I only need one corpse.
Kelsier folded his arms. This man was wary. Though he spoke lightheartedly, he watched Kelsier with care, and held back as if contemplating a method of attack.
He wants something, Kelsier guessed. Something that I have, maybe?
No, he seemed legitimately surprised that Kelsier was there. He had come here intending to visit the well. Perhaps he wanted to enter it, access the power? Or did he perhaps just want to have a look at the thing beyond?
Well, you're obviously resourceful, Kelsier said. Perhaps you can help me with my predicament.
Alas, the drifter said, your case is hopeless.
Kelsier felt his heart sink.
Yes, nothing to be done, the drifter continued. You are indeed stuck with that face. By manifesting those same features on this side, you show that even your soul is resigned to you always looking like one ugly son of a...
Bastard! Kelsier cut in. You had me for a second.
Now that's demonstrably wrong, the drifter said, pointing. I believe only one of us in this room is illegitimate, and it isn't me. Unless...
He tapped the floating corpse in the head with his oar.
What about you, Spanky?
The corpse actually mumbled something.
Happily married parents? Still alive? Really? I'm sorry for their loss.
The drifter looked to Kelsier, smiling innocently.
No bastards on this side? What about yours?
The bastard by birth, Kelsier said, is always better off than the one by choice, Drifter. I'll own up to my nature if you own up to yours.
The Drifter chuckled, eyes alight.
Nice, nice. Tell me, since we're on the topic, which are you? A scar with noble bearing or a nobleman with scar interests? Which half is more you, survivor?
Well, Kelsier said dryly, considering that the relatives of my noble half spent the better part of 4 decades trying to exterminate me, I'd say I'm more inclined toward the scar side.
Ah,
the drifter said, leaning forward.
But I didn't ask which you liked more. I asked which you were.
Is it relevant?
It's interesting, the drifter said, which is enough for me.
He reached down to the corpse he was using as a boat, then removed something from his pocket. Something that glowed, though Kelsier couldn't tell if it was something naturally radiant or just something made of metal. The glow faded as the drifter administered it to his vessel, then, covering the motion with a cough as if to hide from Kelsier what he was doing, furtively applied some of the glow to his oar. When he placed the oar back into the mists, it sent the boat scooting closer to the well.
Is there a way for me to escape this prison? Kelsier asked.
How about this? The drifter said. We'll have an insult battle. Winner gets to ask one question and the other has to answer truthfully. I'll start. What's wet, ugly, and has scars on its arms?
Kelsier raised an eyebrow. All of this talk was a distraction, as evidenced by Drifter scooting again closer to the prison. He's going to try to jump for the well, Kelsier thought. Leap in, hoping to be fast enough to surprise me.
No guess? Drifter asked. The answer is basically anyone who spends time with you, Kelsier, as they end up slitting their wrists, hitting themselves in the face, and then drowning themselves to forget the experience. Ha! Okay, your turn.
I'm going to murder you,
Kelsier said softly.
Wait, what?
If you step inside here, Kelsier said, I'm going to murder you. I'll slice the tendons on your wrists so your hands can't do anything more than batter at me uselessly as I kneel against your throat and slowly crush the life out of you. All while I remove your fingers one by one. I'll finally let you breathe a single, frantic gasp, but at that moment, I'll shove your middle finger between your lips so that you're forced to suck it down as you struggle for air.
You'll go out knowing you choked to death on your own rotten flesh. The Drifter gaped at him, mouth working soundlessly. He finally said.
I don't think you know how to play this game.
Kelsier shrugged.
Seriously, Drifter said, you need some help, friend. I know a guy. Tall, bald, wears lots of earrings. Have a chat with him next.
The Drifter cut off mid-sentence and leaped for the prison, kicking off the floating corpse and throwing himself at the light. Kelsier was ready. As Drifter entered the light, Kelsier grabbed the man by one arm and slung him toward the side of the pool. The maneuver worked, and Drifter seemed to be able to touch the walls and floor here in the well. He slammed against the wall, sending waves of light splashing up. As Kelsier tried to punch at Drifter's head while he was stumbling, the man caught himself on the side of the pool and kicked backward, knocking Kelsier's legs out from beneath him. Kelsier splashed in the light, and he tried to burn metals by reflex. Nothing happened, though there was something to the light here. Something familiar. He managed to get to his feet and caught Drifter lunging for the center, the deepest part. Kelsier snatched the man by the arm, swinging him away. Whatever this man wanted, Kelsier's instincts said that he shouldn't be allowed to have it. Beyond that, the well was Kelsier's only asset. If he could hold the man back from what he wanted, subdue him, perhaps it would lead to answers. The Drifter stumbled, then lunged, trying to grab Kelsier. Kelsier in turn pivoted and buried his fist in the man's stomach. The motion gave him a thrill. After sitting for so long, inactive, it was nice to be able to do something. Drifter grunted at the punch.
All right, then, he muttered.
Kelsier brought his fists up, checked his footing, then unleashed a series of quick blows at Drifter's face that should have dazed him. When Kelsier pulled back, not wanting to go too far and hurt the man seriously, he found that Drifter was smiling at him. That didn't seem a good sign. Somehow, Drifter shook off the hits he'd taken. He jumped forward, dodged Kelsier's attempted punch, then ducked and slammed his fist into Kelsier's kidneys. It hurt. Kelsier lacked a body, but apparently his spirit could feel pain. He let out a grunt and brought up his arms to protect his face, stepping backward in the liquid light. The Drifter attacked, relentless, slamming his fists into Kelsier with no care for the damage he might be doing to himself.
Go to the ground, Kelsier's instincts told him.
He dropped one hand and tried to seize Drifter by the arm, planning to send them both down into the light to grapple. Unfortunately, the Drifter was a little too quick. He dodged and kicked Kelsier's legs from beneath him again, then grabbed him by the throat, slamming him repeatedly, brutally, against the bottom of the shallower part of the prison, splashing him in light that was too thin to be water, but suffocating nonetheless. Finally, Drifter hauled him up, limp. The man's eyes were glowing.
That was unpleasant, Drifter said, yet somehow still satisfying. Apparently, you already being dead means I can hurt you.
As Kelsier tried to grab his arm, Drifter slammed Kelsier down again, then pulled him back up, stunned.
I'm sorry, survivor, for the rough treatment, Drifter continued, but you are not supposed to be here. You did what I needed you to, but you're a wild card I'd rather not deal with right now.
He paused.
If it's any consolation, you should feel proud. It's been centuries since anyone got the drop on me.
He released Kelsier, letting him slump down and catch himself against the side of the prison, half submerged in the light. He growled, trying to pull himself up after Drifter. Drifter sighed, then proceeded to kick at Kelsier's leg repeatedly, shocking him with the pain of it. He screamed, holding his leg. It should have cracked from the force of those kicks, and though it had not, the pain was overwhelming.
This is a lesson, Drifter said, though it was difficult to hear the words through the pain. But not the one you might think it is. You don't have a body, and I don't have the inclination to actually injure your soul. That pain is caused by your mind. It's thinking about what should be happening to you and responding.
He hesitated.
I'll refrain from making you choke on a chunk of your own flesh.
He walked toward the middle of the pool. Kelsier watched through eyes quivering with pain as Drifter held his hands out to the sides and closed his eyes. He stepped into the center of the pool, the deep portion, and vanished into the light. A moment later, a figure climbed back out of the pool. Yet this time, the person was shadowy, glowing with inner light like someone in the world of the living. This pool had let Drifter transition from the world of the dead to the real world. Kelsier gaped, following Drifter with his eyes as the man strode past the pillars in the room and stopped at the other side. Two tiny sources of metal still glowed fiercely there to Kelsier's eyes. Drifter selected one. It was small, as he could toss it into the air and catch it again. Kelsier could sense the triumph in that motion. Kelsier closed his eyes and concentrated. No pain. His leg wasn't actually hurt. Concentrate. He managed to make some of the pain fade. He sat up in the pool, rippling light coming up to his chest. He breathed in and out, though he didn't need the air. Damn. The first person he'd seen in months had thrashed him, then stolen something from the chamber outside. He didn't know what or why, or even how the Drifter had managed to slip from one world to the next. Kelsier crawled to the center of the pool, lowering himself down into the deep portion. He stood, his legs still aching faintly, and put his hands to the sides. He concentrated, trying to what? Transition? What would that even do to him? He didn't care. He was frustrated and humiliated. He needed to prove to himself that he wasn't incapable. He failed. No amount of concentration, visualization, or straining of muscles made him do what the Drifter had managed. He climbed from the pool, exhausted and chastened, and settled on the side. He didn't notice Fuzz standing there until the god spoke.
"What were you doing?"
Kelsier turned. Fuzz visited infrequently these days, but when he did come, he always did it unannounced. If he spoke, he often only raved like a madman.
"Someone was just here," Kelsier said. "A man with white hair. He somehow used this well to pass from the world of the dead to the world of the living."
"I see," Fuzz said softly. "He dared that, did he? Dangerous, with ruin straining against his bonds. But if anyone were going to try something so foolhardy, it would be Sephandrius."
"He stole something, I think," Kelsier said. "From the other side of the room, a bit of metal."
"Ah," Fuzz said softly. "I had thought that when he rejected the rest of us, he would stop interfering. I should know better than to trust an implication from him. Half the time you can't trust his outright promises."
"Who is he?" Kelsier asked.
"An old friend. And no, before you ask, you can't do as he did and transition between realms. Your ties to the physical realm have been severed. You're a kite with no string connecting it to the ground. You cannot ride the perpendicularity across."
Kelsier sighed. "Then why was he able to come to the world of the dead?"
"It's not the world of the dead. It's the world of the mind. Men, all things, truly, are like a ray of light. The floor is the physical realm, where that light pools. The sun is the spiritual realm, where it begins. This realm, the cognitive realm, is the space between where that beam stretches."
The metaphor barely made any sense to him.
"They all know so much," Kelsier thought, "and I know so little."
Still, at least Fuzz was sounding better today. Kelsier smiled toward the god, then froze as Fuzz turned his head. Fuzz was missing half his face. The entire left side was just gone. Not wounded, and there was no skeleton. The complete half smoked, trailing wisps of mist. Half his lips remained, and he smiled back at Kelsier as if nothing were wrong.
"He stole a bit of my essence, distilled and pure," Fuzz explained. "It can invest a human,
grant him or her allomancy.
Your face, Fuzz.
It he thinks to finish me, Fuzz said. Indeed, his knife was placed long ago. I'm already dead.
He smiled again, a gruesome expression, then vanished. Feeling wrung out, Kelsier slumped alongside the pool, lying on the stones, which actually felt a little like real stone instead of the fluffy softness of everything else made of mist. He hated this feeling of ignorance. Everyone else was in on some grand joke, and he was the butt. Kelsier stared up at the ceiling, bathed in the glow of the shimmering well and its column of light. Eventually, he came to a quiet decision. He would find the answers. In the pits of Hath-Sin, he had awakened to purpose and had determined to destroy the Lord Ruler. Well, he would awaken again. He stood up and stepped into the light, strengthened. The clash of these gods was important, that thing in the well, dangerous. There was more to all of this than he'd ever known, and because of that, he had a reason to live. Perhaps more importantly, he had a reason to stay sane.